Well, good morning, everybody. We might get started. Thank you all so much for being here. My name's Katrina Cashman. I'm the Senior Curator and Gallery Manager for the National Art School, and it's wonderful to have this special opportunity to come together. Before we go any further, I would like to acknowledge that we're gathered today on the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, the traditional owners on whose lands, waters and skies we meet and share. And we pay respects to all Gadigal elders, past, present, and we celebrate the diversity, the history and creativity of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And I particularly want to extend that welcome and respect to all people gathered here today. We've had such an incredible week. I just want to reflect for a minute to say how thankful we are that we've had this incredible opportunity to work on this very special project. Of course, we have an incredible publication. If you go and look at the exhibition, check out the publication. But I particularly want to thank the generosity of the curators and artists who are with us today. Let's just have a round of applause for our artists and curators. Thank you. Before I introduce them, I also want to acknowledge all the hard work of the whole National Art School team. The entire school has had their hands on this project. We've all worked incredibly hard, but particularly my colleagues in Dharani Nalawada, John Waite, Head of First Peoples Programs here, and our colleague Isabelity, our First Peoples Academic Programs Officer, Ben Aquila, who is a wonderful artist who's joined the project team to support the whole development. Lucy Latella in the NAS Gallery curatorial team. I think Lucy's here. Thank you, Lucy. Incredible hard work. And Anita Toft also in the gallery project team. So thank you, Anita. I want to acknowledge who we have on the stage today. We have Clotilde Bullen, OAM, Clo's in the middle, wearing the black. Clo is a Noongar woman living and working on Borloo in Perth. She's managed this entire project over the last 2 years, I think it is. Thank you so much, Clo, for being here and for a very special week. Next to her is Zali Morgan in the green. Zali is also a Noongar woman from Borloo in Perth. And Zali has been very instrumental in working very closely on the programming as well. Thank you, Zali. Next to me, we have Michael Doe, a Gadigal-based curator. His main job is at the Sydney Opera House as the Senior Curator of Contemporary Projects. So thank you so much, Michael, for agreeing to work with us on top of your other work. It's a huge project and we really appreciate everything you've done. Michael is fully responsible for this incredible publication. Thank you, Michael. Next to, after our curators, we have our wonderful group of artists. So next to Michael, we have Gamilaroi and Kamilaroi man, Dennis Golding, who lives and works on Gadigal here in Sydney. We're so lucky to have you, Dennis. And Dennis has created the incredible new work, Bingo, which was actually made here at the National Art School with our printmaking department. So thank you. Next to Dennis, we have artist James Nguyen. His family ancestry is Vietnamese and he lives and works on Nam in Melbourne. And we're so proud of James because he's a National Art School graduate and an incredible artist. Thank you. Thank you, James. Next to James, we have Jenna Malema Lee. Jenna is a waterman woman from originally from the Northern Territory who lives and works on Nam in Melbourne. Thank you, Jenna, for your incredible work. On the other side of Zali, we have Jackie Cheng, whose family ancestry is Malaysian Chinese, and she lives on Yaru country in Broome in WA. So thank you, Jackie, for being here. And again, next to Jackie, we have Elam Ashragian Hakansen, an Iranian-Australian artist who also lives and works on Borloo in WA and internationally. So wonderful to have you, Elam. So I did want to just say, today's really about listening and learning. There's a huge amount in this exhibition. There's a lot of things for us to learn about, a lot of truths to be told, and we're really looking forward to hearing what our panel of speakers will talk to us about. Yesterday we had individual artist talks throughout the day, but today is the first opportunity for everybody to speak together and to really draw upon all of the ideas and themes in the show. And I think of in terms of a person who could manage that process for us, there's nobody better than Nakari Thorpe. Nakari, thank you so much for being with us. Nakari is a Gunai, Gumijara and Kurang woman from Victoria and Queensland. She's a presenter. You would have seen her on TV. She's a television presenter and journalist, an Indigenous communities reporter with ABC News, based here on Gadigal, covering, you know, all types of coverage on television, radio and digital. Thank you so much, Nakari, and it's over to you. We'll have our program of talks, and then at the end there'll be time for questions from the audience. So thank you so much. Okay.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Katrina, for that lovely welcome. It's really an honour to be here today and chairing this incredible panel of curators and artists. I guess just a lay of the land, because there's eight of you, we'll probably get a question each, about 5 minutes each, see how we go with the timing. And, of course, we'd love to throw it to the audience as well for some questions towards the end. Chloe, I'd love to start with you. Can you tell us about the genesis of this project and the neighbour at the gate? You were first approached by the National Art School in 2023, signed on as the lead curator last year. In doing so, you had a particular project in mind. What was it that first inspired you to create the rationale for this exhibition?
I'm going to be quick, because I actually think the artists, we need to hear lots and lots from them. So I think curators always draw upon their personal experiences and things that they see when they're working with artists and with their own communities, as well as kind of how they navigate other communities. I grew up in a place in Borloo. For those people that might come from Perth, there's a place called the KGB. It's Kandula Balga Girawin, and it's a triangle of it's pretty povo. It's a triangle of suburbs that are much like the Bronx, but you know, a lot of Noongars lived there. I grew up there. A lot of Asian delis. This is back in the 70s and 80s. That tells you how old I am. And I had this experience in my own family and growing up there around what it's like to be connected with Asian communities very deeply and intimately through kinship ties and family ties, and just being in the same community together, because we were pushed out to the fringes, low socioeconomic area. So I've seen that my whole life. My kids are Burmese Aboriginal as well. And we say Blackanese over there, but there's lots of different... I think I heard... there was another terminology I heard yesterday. Someone said it. China... Yes, China Aborigine, which your dad said. And this is true. We know these histories, but a lot of other people don't know these histories, and we're often excluded from that. So I was really keen to talk about that history. James is going to get really sick of me saying this, but it is true. When Anna Davis and I curated James's work into the National, a video work of James's many years ago now, and I was really struck by the fact that James's family, coming from Vietnam, coming as migrants, knew really nothing about Aboriginal culture when they came to Australia. They didn't know that they were walking onto Aboriginal country. And, you know, when your parents, when your auntie and uncle spoke yesterday and talking about how they wanted to keep making sure that that was really clear to people, oh, like my heart. They've done that work, you know. And it really struck me that what we needed was to talk about these histories, but to make them, like, to centre ourselves in them, not to make them in response to colonialism, not to, but just to go, these are our histories and we're going to care for them and we're going to talk about them. So it felt really important to do that. I got approached by NAS some time ago, actually, and for ages I couldn't do it. I was working on another show, and then eventually I said, all right, I'll do it, but I want to do it with a curatorium. And picked the best curatorium in the world, sincerely, and we drew upon our own histories and our backgrounds to kind of not only select the artists, but to actually think about the thematics of the show. So I think, Jackie, I was talking to you about how many artists, I think we had like 45 artists on that list originally, and we whittled it down. and then landed with these beautiful people. And so that's where it really came from. And I do have to say thank you so much to the National Art School, because some people might see this as a really political show or something. And it's interesting that we all walk in a body politic. Like, it is, we can't get away from that. But this show, if we can see past that, we want it to be seen as an invitation and a way to call people and community in to experience what we all experience, and create that. So that's enough from me about that.
No, that's incredible. Thanks, Chloe. Well, Michael, I wanted to throw this to you then as a curator. What inspired the title, The Neighbour at the Gate, and how does that frame the overarching themes of the exhibition?
Yeah, there was a lot of conversation around what we should call the title. You know, never judge a book by its cover, never judge an exhibition by its title. So it's high stakes, right? And so it was a big kind of arm wrestle around how do you even begin to encapsulate these themes? And because we're working in real time, the works are all commissioned for the show. It's getting developed. We're thinking and progressing together. There was no sense of what the end would even look like at the very beginning or even at the middle, probably not until the 75% mark. And so it's a real kind of leap of faith in terms of how do you frame this? And so I think really it was kind of close sort of research into immigration policies, America, here, globally, and thinking about who gets invited in, who gets turned away, what are the barriers, what are the borders. And so that works on that level, but also then drilling it down to kind of even more closer, because the show is, it reaches further out into these kind of big, important sort of subjects of borders and national identity and stuff, but it also roosts really close to home as well in terms of the personal, who lives next door, what are these communities, especially the ones that Chloe was talking about. And so we were like, yeah, okay, you know, that's a good kind of metaphor for something that works at different modalities, different registers, and it moves at different wavelengths, different frequencies. And this is the show. It is political, but it is also autobiographical. It's hard, but it's also soft, light, and airy. It's spacious, but it's also dense. It's screaming, but it's also whispering. And so we needed something kind of imaginative to kind of speak to all those different things. And we had to choose when we weren't necessarily knowing what that was, but I think it turned out good. I don't know. I mean,
absolutely. I think so. Absolutely. I was just really agreeing with you that, you know, I just walked through it and there's definitely that calming presence, but the message is so strong. Appreciate that. Thanks so much, Michael. Jenna, with your beautiful series of work, what tensions or contradictions were you hoping to surface?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. So my work is the Lotus Billabong upstairs in the kind of back. And being a descendant of the exact kind of family histories that Chloe was alluding to, so all of my international migrant ancestors on both sides of my family arrived in Australia before 1901. So I've always said that my family are like really big fans of interracial marriage because it's generations and generations. So for me, it was kind of this moment. We all got together late last year and met, and we were talking about experiences, and it was in reflecting on that that I realised that there was kind of tension within our own family. But then I've always been struck by how little people knew about the kind of older waves of migration and the resulting families, and that's due to a whole bunch of policies, one of them being the White Australia policy of 1901. So in my work, I really wanted to turn directly to family and food and country, because I think that that is the actual proof that we have about these histories is either in the landscape through the plants that we received via trade, or it's in our families, in our family names. And then language and food is kind of the other area where you see these histories. But the thing that I really love about billabongs is if you've kind of never been to one, on the top, they're these permanent still bodies of water that are very calm, beautiful lotuses. But underneath is this like dense, tangled, fight to the death, lack of sunlight. And I really wanted to look at kind of that tension between the known and unknown. And for me, as we were all talking, I just kept seeing this billabong about being that difference between the known and unknown and that quarantining at the gate of information. So there were kind of lots of different levels for me. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you. James, can you talk us through the development of your work for this exhibition and how the theme and process, collaboration and discussion with the other artists really brought your work together?
Yep. So through a lot of our conversations, there was this idea of being responsible for not only our own work, but also for each other. And so when you think about that sense of neighbourliness, you're thinking beyond yourself, right? And so for the work, I think at that time I was like really struggling a little bit about the global wars that are happening at the moment in Gaza and Ukraine and in Africa and even close around Indonesia here. And so kind of like it feels like Australia has always been, quote unquote, this safe haven for immigrants. But in actual fact, unbeknownst to a lot of newcomers to the country, it has had this constant history of genocide and war that we overlay on top of it with, you know, the migrant minority, the model minority on top of that, and then we reconstruct our lives. And so I wanted to revisit some research that I did before. And it was basically just looking at how the destruction in Vietnam that led to my own family's farm being sprayed with Agent Orange and my family coming to Australia to kind of escape that following the war in Vietnam, and the ironic realization that coming to Australia, a colonial state that engages in military production and the war machine, was one of the key countries that produced the same Agent Orange that was used and deployed in the Vietnamese jungles and farmlands. And the thing is that, you know, coming to Australia to seek this sense of safety and comfort also meant that we had to live within the industrial repercussions of the Agent Orange factories that kept kind of like, when they got removed, they didn't really look after the land, and so they just quickly buried it under the under like a clay cap, and then quickly built an Olympic village on top of it for the Sydney Olympics. And now it keeps leaching out into the waterways. And so the idea that, you know, like when we see people as other, when we see people as far away or really distant, or their suffering is really far away, it's actually very close to us. And so there's this real need for a sense of empathy and trust, not only within ourselves and our family and the people that we're close to, but also trust in strangers and trust in peers and the people around you. And I think for me, this was kind of like the driver for the for the work that I made for this exhibition. Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much. Zali, this is a curator. Chloe mentioned there was a big list of artists, but how did you whittle that down? How did you select the participating artists, and what were you looking for in their work?
Yeah, I think it was many, many conversations and, combining of our own lists of who we... I guess it was more like yes, the existing practice of the artist, but also the potential of what the artist could make when posed with these questions and these discussions that we were having at the beginning of the project. And so I think it was really, yeah, I guess, looking into that and also then how those artists are having, or their works would be in conversation with each other and building upon different themes. And I think that's, yeah, it was really important to have a well-rounded view of, yeah, what we then turned into The Neighbour at the Gate. So not just what the idea of Aboriginal art is, but also what is Asian art as well. I think that also played into it. And yeah, I think Ellie in particular, you know, having an Iranian voice in that mix was something that was really important, I know, for myself and then the curatorium in particular as well, and to push, I guess, what Asian art is or our perception of that idea. So I think, yeah, along with this invitation for artists to push their own practices, it was also about audiences pushing their ideologies of what these artists are.
That's fascinating. Jackie, I guess, how did you interpret the concept of the neighbour and the gate for your work? And did that shift throughout your creative process?
Oh, yes. How I came about with this conversation in terms of the neighbour at the gate, firstly and foremost, this is amazing peers that I'm working with. I'm treating them like my greatest neighbours already. But also because I'm the youngest in terms of immigration status, or even, you know, because I arrived in Australia in 2001. I didn't know anything. So I lived in Sydney for a little bit, and I was invited to go to Broome. So Broome has opened my eyes. And the reason I went to Broome was because someone, you know, invited me to go and do some babysitting gig, which I did. And it was a two-week holiday, ended up 20 years later, and I'm still there. And the main reason being is that I realized that, one, that, like I said before, I really know nothing about Australia, because I realized that I've engaged in conversations with someone who's got, you know, Japanese, Aboriginal, Scottish ancestry all in one, and Chinese and Malay, and I couldn't quite fathom that. That's opened a whole different world for me, because that opportunity has enabled me to travel across to Kimberley, which is another amazing world out there. And each time when I traverse through the invisible boundaries that I go through, which is like the work that I was trying to work through, I learn something new. And I've always felt like I'm neither here nor there. I'm constantly traversing in between, because, like I mentioned in my artist talk before, my mom says I'm Chinese, but not Chinese enough, because I can speak Cantonese and Mandarin, but I can't read or write. So I'm neither, you know, outside looking in or inside looking out. So that's the idea behind that concept of the artwork, was really to invite others to go through the gate and to feel like, do you ever feel that way as well? And if you do, do you stand inside, or do you stay outside, or do you sort of encapsulate yourself within the layers and the complexity of a colonization world, the situation that we lived in? So I think the work really draws you in to the aspect of to pause for a little moment, to think about, you know, the mutual respect and camaraderie that we, you know, present to our neighbors, to our friends, and try and make friends along the way. Also, you know, the act of resistance of not forgetting. So in the work itself, there was poetry written in it. And for the longest time, since I was a child, my mom has taught me this poetry from this famous poet named Li Bai. And it's the moon poetry. And I've recited that so beautifully and so well to this point that not until this project I actually learned how to write it. So mom taught me and sat with me. I've learned to practice this writing, and I realized that there's a lot more in it, and it's not so much of me not feeling Chinese, but it's so much more that I don't even know about myself. So I think this whole project has enabled myself to learn a little bit more about myself, my relationship with my mother, and my relationship with my community and the work that I do throughout.
That's so special. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you.
Elham, I'll just come to you now. Do you see the neighbour at the gate as a call to action, a some kind of provocation or more of a reflective space? How do you see it?
All of the above. I think that it's such a beautiful prompt because it's so it resonates so much with current discourse and current context. I think when Zali, Chloe and Michael were talking to us about the neighbour at the gate, the concepts that were behind this exhibition, I thought, first of all, wow, like this is such an incredible space to be in that I've not been privy to before, but also how much it resonates right now, right here. And I think that was probably the most important bit, especially when making the work. It's, you know, the video work that I've created, God of War, was very much a reflection of a more historical context, like 35 years of experience in displacement, and then to come into this space where there's a lot of things happening around the world. I think that, you know, it just makes you reflect just how much, as a community, we need to focus on these things. You know, how does the God of War become the God of love? And I think it's such an incredible exhibition with each of these works. Like, there's this conversation happening already. Like, I was just telling... Well, not telling, I was messaging Jackie and I was like, I love how the video works, like in conversation with your gate, like it's a window and we're just seeing windows into these different experiences that all share the same essence. And I think that's extremely special and it's doing all of the above, call to action, the second one, provocation and reflection. And it's asking us to really bear witness to each of these experiences and to remember and to reclaim our histories, but also to, I think in my personal perspective, rewrite how the future is as well, and how we can collectively come together. And I love what I read, like one of the articles, and I love what that we have to celebrate our differences together, but that's how we find that unified energy. And I think this is such a beautiful way of navigating that space.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. Last but definitely not least. Sorry to leave you hanging there, Janice. With your works, I guess, how do you see audiences responding and engaging with the works? Is it a discomfort or empathy part of the goal?
I think moments of joy and love, because that's what really Bingo is about. And, you know, when we were building a lot of our conversations for this exhibition, there was a lot of thoughts around how can we create a safe space and how can we create space to exchange knowledge and feel safe to be able to share those stories as well. And so I thought, after considering a couple of stories at the start of this project, I understood what we were doing and what the exhibition was about. And I then just started to reflect on my own family and my own urban upbringing, living down in Redfern in the block as a young Koori kid in the 90s and early 2000s. There's just many moments that I loved recounting memories of the surrounds. And this was a time when the block, Redfern, through media, they portrayed so much negativity. And they didn't highlight any stories of joy or love or the strength of our community. And this was a story that I wanted to highlight to, again, rewrite that, you know, that time as well, that how community kind of needed to create these safe spaces for each other just to feel, you know, inspired and to just have a safe yarn with our aunties and uncles. You know, I remember the beautiful ochre, you know, earthy coloured bricks, the sounds of the trains that you hear as you walk down the block, and all the aunties and uncles who were sitting out front of their house who were just greeting you as you walk down. So neighbours is very much a part of Bingo. My nan and my auntie lived two doors from each other. In the middle of their house was an abandoned terrace house. That's what turned into Bingo Nights. Nan and my auntie would connect the power cords to bring light into this empty house, and they would create a warmth, tables that were spread out, neighbours, community, they were all invited to come in, and it was just found cardboard that we'd see around the streets. We'd rip off like cereal box or, you know, water or drink cartons and just make our own bingo cards. But I remember creating little images, symbols, and through this whole process, I'm very lucky to still be having been living like 20 minutes from each of my grandmothers. So this work is really grounded in the stories and exchanging those memories with both of my grandmothers, who are incredible storytellers themselves. And so each of the cards that you see are all about relationships with me, my family and my community. There's little ones in there like, you know, the street light. When that turns on, that's our indicator to go home. Or there's a little a motorcycle, like a Peewee 50 that my cousin had because she used to cruise around in the block with it on the paddock. So there's a lot of fun stories, a lot of moments of joy. And I think this is something that I wanted to create as an act of resilience and strength to highlight how community work together and how we need to have our strength and bonds to continue living.
Beautiful. Thank you for that. I guess just to wrap it all up, I wanted to throw to all of you, if we can kind of get 10, 20 seconds from each of you, what you want people to take away from this exhibition. What is the legacy of it? I guess we can start with you, Michael.
Oh, gosh. I think there's a lot. While it's not a story that is known by everyone, there is kind of work that has been done to kind of talk about the different sort of parallels between Aboriginal people and Asian Australians' experiences. And often in those exhibitions, there's an attempt to be sort of authoritative, to be full, to be kind of telling this sort of very encyclopedic, dignified kind of story, which it is. But the point of our exhibition is to not be any of those things. It's not to start necessarily with history, with fact, with dates. It's to start with feeling. Yep. And so if you take anything away, it's just a deeply felt show. Yep. And soak in that. And we're not trying to be encyclopedic. We're just trying to be rich in feeling and very personal.
Yep. I think with mine and what I've already experienced while the show has been up is everyone has a shared experience with either the motifs or symbols or even bingo games themselves. Yeah, there's been really good yarns I've had already through the artist talks, and I think, you know, those symbols and those icons and the cards themselves resonate to someone's experience, and that's what I love about.
Yes, I think for me, it's like, yeah, like, I think a lot of us are going through, like, really hard times. And so it's like, this is the time when we actually lean on each other. And also, it's time to listen to each other and hear each other's different stories, and that gives you a lot of strength. And I think it's, yeah, as artists, we're always looking for forms of strength to find our own voice, and there's no better than to be amongst your peers, yeah.
For me, I think, especially in the wake of the failed referendum, I would really love audiences of all kind of all communities, all walks of life, all, you know, time span of immigration status, to realise that in being on this land, you are connected to Aboriginal issues, and that's non-negotiable. So I think when I think about the landscape that you walk through, even as you arrive, and I've done it myself after living in the UK, you walk off the plane and you smell the eucalyptus in our air. Like, you're on Aboriginal land. Our issues are your issues, and I don't think prior to that referendum we really understood how much we needed to bring each other in, and Chloe keeps calling it a calling in, not a calling out. And so I'm hoping our exhibition will kind of start that ball rolling.
Yeah, very simply, I think. And look, I mean, I would suggest that probably all of us sitting here are hardcore activists in the sense that, like, we say what we mean and we're not... This isn't all just nice and loving and everything else. As much as we'd like it to be, there are hard realities. But the one thing I would say that I hope people take away is that our similarities are bigger than our differences. And I really, really want visitors and audiences to think about that. That because the minute we start othering and dehumanising is the minute that we completely forget our shared humanity. So if, and no one show can ever do anything like that, but if people get a little snippet of that sense, then I think we've done a good job.
It's hard when you get five people in.
Running out of options.
Yeah, I guess probably echoing a lot of what has already been said, I just hope people maybe not necessarily take away, but just sit in a moment of reflection and really think about who's your neighbours and, you know, are you in our neighbourhood? I think that's...
For me, I've always taken this part of practice or my life as my parents would tell me, you're a little grain of sand. You know nothing. So wherever you go, traverse with respect and know that, you know, you're a part of this larger community. I mean, like, look at our contemporary society right now, doom scrolling, and you see all these ridiculous things that happens. And I just hope that people don't reflect on that and say, yeah, that's how we should behave, because it's not. So, you know, neighborly, let's get on.
I think for me, it's probably been remembering how to love one another, but also remembering that we do need to learn from each other and to actually take the time to get to know each other and to understand each other. And I think this is what this exhibition does so beautifully, that it offers that.
Great. Incredible. Thank you so much. I think we have time for a couple of questions from the audience, if there are any. We've got a roving mic down here. So please, yeah, raise your hand if you've got a question for our incredible panel.
Well, could I ask a question? I just love hearing all of your reflections today. But one of the things I was thinking about as you were speaking, Chloe, and you, Elham, talking about love and respect for each other and listening and learning from each other, I think one of the beautiful aspects of the exhibition is actually James's work, which is participatory and invites all of us to engage and to participate. James, would you like to talk a little bit more about that aspect in your exhibition?
So with the incense, you know, being a newcomer to this country, I decided to colonize the entire space with the smell, right? But so I think with the incense, there's some things in it that to me really connected with kind of like First Peoples practices about cleansing and asking for permission before entering space. And for a lot of Vietnamese and, you know, Southeast Asian and East Asian practices, we use incense to also clear space and also commune with our ancestors and the spirits around us. And the story that I tell everyone is whenever I go back to Vietnam, my first duty is always to go back to my grandparents' graves. And it's to look after your grandparents and be reminded of where you come from and all their histories and all of that. But my uncles and aunties always remind me that your role when you come to that is to see yourself in their histories and to acknowledge that you're carrying them with you. And in doing that, we always offer three sticks of incense to our grandparents and our parents. And we also always reserve one stick of incense for all the neighbours around where our grandparents lay. And the important things, specifically for Vietnamese people, is that having gone through war, so many people were displaced. And at one time, we thought we would never be able to come back. And so anyone who's around to be able to look after the parents' graves would be able to give a little bit of reprieve and care for the neighbours, because their children might have been lost forever or would never have come back. And for the people to have left and escape, to know that someone else is out there to care for you, like some stranger is out there helping you. And so when you're here in a new place, it's your responsibility to look after the people and the landscapes around you while you're here, because it's kind of like this almost reciprocal way of care where that's your duty. And I think what I've tried to do is I spent time making clay from the ceramics department, making these little pinch pots, and I hope that throughout the exhibition people can bring to be able to also make those pinch pots and contribute to the exhibition, but also to be able to take the fired pots away with them and to carry this sense of duty forward. Our duty is not only to the people we're familiar with, but our duty is also really important to the people and the landscape and the histories around us. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. I think we've got a question over here.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you all for incredibly powerful stories and really inspiring. But for me, you're all talking about cultural heritage. And yet quite often in arts and arts practice, cultural heritage is seen as a dirty word. Do you think exhibitions like this and the kind of work you're all doing will help us to redefine new ways of thinking about cultural heritage in Australia?
Like about cultural heritage?
I don't know if I've ever experienced it being a dirty word. And I don't know if there would be a way for me to make art outside of it. Because I think particularly, obviously would never speak on behalf of any other artists, but from a First Nations perspective, you make from your family and your culture is the protocol, so I can't not. I don't know if that helps. Yeah, I'm not really too sure.
Yeah, I think maybe cultural heritage is only a dirty word if you're not open to seeing other cultures. Like, it's only a dirty word if you're afraid of what you don't know. And yeah, your culture, it doesn't matter what your culture is who you are. So yeah, I guess that's all I have to.
I think there's also this sense of stereotype of say, you know, two people speaking a different language on the bus, and you're just like, can you just like fucking speak English? You know, that I think is maybe what you're referring to, this kind of being locked out, this sort of like kind of approaching and responding to something you don't know out of anger. And so I think, you know, for us, especially in trying to learn each other's sort of kind of positions in the world and where you've come from, your lineage, you know, we choose not to respond from anger. It's to respond with curiosity. It's to respond with kind of uncertainty, care, poetry. And so I think, yes, I hear what you're saying. And in a way, we are kind of modelling this in that just because you don't know something, there are lots of paths to knowing that doesn't come from appointing and calling out and a kind of refusal, you know.
Okay. Oh, yeah, we've got one more question, I think, at the back we'll have time for.
Good morning. Chloe has probably recognised my voice. It's her mother. But I, firstly, as a senior Widandi elder from Noongar country and having travelled over from the West, I'd really like to congratulate the artists in their bravery. Everything about this show resonated with me because it was combining both cultures. And when I was listening to the panel a moment ago about nurturing other people's culture, I think that's what we as Australians don't do very well. And we need to start thinking about that and how we can do that better. I've just finished making a little ceramic koolamon, and today has given me the opportunity to be part of this show, which is an absolute privilege. So for me, and just going back to what this lady has mentioned about culture, culture is everywhere. It flows into each other with every human being that is on the planet. We just don't understand it often. We don't share it. We can become very selfish. And we need to be more open about Cutajan. We need to be more open and have more love in our hearts to share that shared path with every culture that we see. But congratulations to the beautiful artists. It was the best thing I've done for a very long time, and I felt very privileged to be part of it. Thank you.
Thank you. It's beautiful. I think that's a lovely way to wrap up our panel today of our incredible artists and curators. It's been a fascinating conversation. I'm feeling very inspired. I'm sure you are all too. Another big round of applause for our incredible panel of artists and curators today. Thank you, guys.
I feel that there's no better point to finish on. Thank you so much, Mrs. Bullen, for your incredible words, and we all really appreciate your contribution there. Thank you again to our artists and curators. Please stay and enjoy our wonderful community and family day. You can all participate and make an incense burner. You can do printmaking tote bags. You can make a tassel inspired by Jackie's work. And of course, don't forget the exhibition and the incredible publication. We're so proud of that. And tonight, if I'm hoping there's still tickets left, but we have an amazing Shared Skies music concert that'll be here in the Cell Block Theatre featuring DJ Rocky Stallone, Rainbow Chan, and of course the indomitable Barker. So please check that out. Come, relax, enjoy, hold space, reflect, and let's all, share the love that this exhibition opportunity gives us. So thank you so much. Oh, and of course, we have to thank Nakari. Nakari, thank you so much for your incredible work.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.